What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome in Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Trillville Thursday. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it. As always, Randy is out for the remainder of the week. We will both be out on Monday for President's Day, and we'll be back together on Tuesday. So Abe Gordon fills in for Randy for the next couple of days. Good morning to you, Abe. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Nice of Randy to leave on practically the slowest 2 days of the sports calendar.
It's very smart.
I know we talk about the MLB pre and post All-Star game, all that stuff, but I was working on the rundown for tomorrow. It is Deadsville.
Yeah, we're going to have to come up with some creative stuff.
I have some. I came up with some.
Good. Yeah. I mean, yesterday, there was a little bit more going on yesterday, but we did the first 10 minutes of the 1 o'clock hour talking about who we think is cool. So I think we'll be all right. Like, I think we'll figure it out. But that was literally the topic for the first 10 minutes of the 1 o'clock hour. Is that guy cool? Yeah, he's pretty cool. What about that guy? Yeah, he's kind of cool. Do you think this guy's cool?
Definitely not.
Yeah, I think, no, he's not that cool.
I got a couple definitely nots.
And then Bo said the Fonz, which is hilarious. So it's the All-Star break in the NBA. That'll be going on this weekend. Maybe we could spend a little bit of time talking about that. Not really a ton to talk about. Trey is an All-Star, which is great, and he certainly looked like one last night in the final game before the All-Star break. What a contest in New York between the Hawks and the Knicks. Overtime, they lose, the Hawks do, 149-148, but man, it looked like that game was over about five different times, and the Hawks kept fighting back and finding a way to make it interesting. Like, they kind of had their own little Reggie Miller moment at the end with the inbounds pass and Dyson Daniels making the free throws. And I mean, George Niang had a great look at the game winner. I know that wasn't the play. Trey kind of takes it to the rim, and they played good defense on him. Onyeka grabs a loose ball, kicks it out to a wide open Niang. I thought it was good when it left his fingers because he was so open, and it's a corner three for a guy.
I thought it was
going to
be good until it left his fingers.
And then, man, short-armed it.
Yeah.
Just short-armed it. Should have made it. Would have won. That would have been an incredible finish.
A little time crunch. I think he probably rushed his shot a little bit.
Probably. He's got to make that shot, though.
He like,
that's
the ball
what he
like
is.
5/10 of a second. You know
that's
what
he
like,
is, though.
I agree.
He's a corner three-point shooter, and he got a corner three.
Yeah. And it also, like, because of how it played out, it would have been, I mean, possibly my favorite win of the year.
It would have been a really good win.
Like, it's certainly up there in discussion, but in terms of just my favorite, it would have been up there. And we've been pretty open about the Hawks, like, where they are right now, especially without Jalen Johnson. The thing that I keep coming back to is these guys are fighting. Like they are really, and I'm not saying, like, defensively they're playing hard, right? This is the highest scoring game in the NBA this season. But they're fighting, and you mentioned, like, it felt like this game was over four times, five times. Like, to me, it was like 8 or 10 times. Like, even midway through the fourth quarter, you got it down to 3. They built it back up to 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, a lot of fight. Nice of them to get back in it. They were down 18, 15 in the second half, blah, blah, blah. And that was that. And it felt many times like it was over. They really keep fighting. And to me, as much as the team is about Trae Young and some of the other guys, the fact that they don't quit on games, and I'm not saying that they have a great effort, but they don't just quit on games, that is finally, to me, Quinn Snyder.
Yeah, it feels like there's less of like, we weren't ready for this game. We weren't mentally prepared.
Now,
we
they start slow in. Quite a bit.
Yeah, but remember how many times over the last handful of years that was literally what the coach was, even Quinn Snyder last year at times was like, yeah, we just kind of,
that's fair,
for whatever reason, weren't, which, you know, cool, good. I'm glad they are now.
Wildly unacceptable to have ever had that as a comment.
So now you've gotten past that part of it, which is nice. There's definitely been wins this year where they haven't had guys that in years past they would have just lost. They would just flat out lost that game and probably look like they didn't even show up that night that they've won. So that's good too, definitely. But that's kind of what it is now, right? Like no slight to the guys that are out there, but with Jalen Johnson going down, with DeAndre Hunter being traded, I like the guys, you know, you like what you're getting from Niang, LeVert, and Mann off the bench, specifically LeVert and Niang last night, 21 and 20, respectively. But it kind of is what it is, right?
Well,
this team is okay. They're a play-in, probably, and with effort, maybe you win and make a scrappy playoff series, whatever, but impressive effort last night on the road against a team who actually is quite good in the New York Knicks. So, yeah, you give them a nod for that. I'll give them a nod for that.
Again, it's weird, and, like, it's going to sound emotional, and it's not, but, like, I'm quite proud of like, what the Hawks have done since the injury to Jalen Johnson, since the trade deadline. Like the fact that, despite what I said, and I'm sure others as well, that the season's over and throw in the towel, all that stuff, they're and obviously you can't like approach it that way as a pro athlete. I know you famously said, any team that just tries in the NBA is going to find their way to 35, 40 wins.
Yeah, you can go almost 500 if you have decent guys and they try hard every night.
But how many years have we seen this team not really do that?
Yeah.
And again, even last year, if you're down 13 in the second half, it may as well, that's going to turn into 20 and turn into 22, and then scrubs are in the final 8 minutes. It's just not happening. And not just last night, by the way. You came back from down 21, I think it was, to beat the – you've had multiple 18, 20, 22-point comebacks
the
this
Bucks,
year.
Like last Friday.
21
right?
points.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it just – it feels good, but then you also look at you gave up $1.50. Like that's, and I know it's overtime, but like
but you gave up $1.40 in regulation, or what,
it's
whatever, 137 to get into overtime.
I didn't realize
that's what it is. I mean that's without Jalen, even with Jalen Johnson, their main defensive rotation was only like middle of the pack. It felt like it was significantly better because over the last handful of years, their main defensive rotation has been bottom five. Like they've just been an awful defensive team. They were, they were somewhere right around 15th or 17th or something like that in defensive rating when he was on the floor. When he was off the floor pre-injury, it fell off a cliff. Now that he's not going to be with the team for the remainder of the season, that just is what it is. Like your best defensive group is going to have to score a lot. Like that's how you're going to win these games against teams that are good, like the Knicks and other teams that you're playing. I get why they're doing it because they want Niang and LeVert and these guys coming off the bench. Mogae only played 16 minutes, so he started but didn't really play starters minutes. And I understand you're trying to develop some of these guys. I don't know.
Well, the other thing is
how
just
much time I'm giving him in a game like this, where he's just drastically overmatched by the competition. Maybe you could do it in games where the competition level is a little bit more equal. But yeah, I mean that dude's out there going 0-for-6, scoring 2 points in the starting lineup. That's tough. That's a tough one to overcome when their starting center, and I realize Okongwu was kind of the starting center, but when their guy went for 44 last night.
I didn't realize he had that much.
Yeah.
Like the first half just he poured it on a little bit, and it didn't feel like 44 to me.
It felt like
it was Brunson's game, but really
Brunson, Brunson took over late.
Right, but Towns did lead the team in points.
Yeah.
Can you confirm something for me?
Maybe.
Because I saw this on Twitter, and I was watching the game on mute. Down the stretch.
Okay.
I put the volume on for overtime. Did they start the Trae Young chant with like 8 seconds left, and that's when the Hawks started a comeback? Like, is that true?
I'm not sure. I didn't pay close attention to the audio either.
That I heard that.
Is that what happened?
I don't know if that was someone like making an ironic statement, or if like they actually like, because we all thought like you're down 6 points with 18 seconds left.
Yeah,
you get a three from Niang, and you're like, all right, like.
Like, cool. Who knows? Maybe you foul him, maybe they miss a free throw or whatever. Yeah, but then they throw
terrible
the ball directly
turnover.
To Tyson Daniels.
Right under the basket,
right under
by
the
way.
Basket. Yeah, he damn near had the end one.
And then you play your way to the free throw line and get an offensive rebound and tie it up. It's just like, did they really start that Trae Young chant only to blow, like you said, like Reggie Miller-esque, like only to blow it there? And then it would have been, I mean, that just would have been the icing on the cake if Trae had found a way to hit that runner at the end. It was over outstretched. He got a little body bump, not a foul in my opinion. I know some people were calling for one, but...
Oh, yeah. Not there.
If he would have been able to... If that would have been his 40th point, a game winner in overtime, like, after they had said it, I mean, come on.
After
it doesn't
get
any better.
After everything that he's done in that building through over the years.
What do you think their confidence level would be if that's a matchup in the playoffs? The Knicks.
High.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think that it wouldn't be?
I don't think it would be high. I don't know their record against other teams, but like,
so
do you think they'd rather play the Hawks or
the
Pistons?
Here's the thing about the Knicks. Their record against sub-500 teams is the reason why their record is so good. I think they're 11-12 against teams that are over 500. Now, I saw that stat this morning, which is weird because when the Hawks beat them earlier in the season, their record was above 500. And then they lost to them yesterday, and their record was below 500. So I don't know if they're saying teams that right now their record is above or below 500 or at the time of playing them. I'm not sure. But, yeah, the reason the Knicks are 36-18 is because they're beating up on bad competition. They do a good job against very bad teams. Decent teams play them closely, and good teams tend to beat them. Which one of those things are the Hawks?
The Hawks are 2-2 against them. They have one more game in Atlanta.
But when did they beat them, though? When did they beat him? They beat him when they had Jalen Johnson, right?
No, and that's fair, too. But it does feel like, I mean, last night wouldn't give me any confidence if I were the Knicks that we had to go to overtime. And maybe you talk to yourself like, oh, well, we blew it late in the last 6 seconds. It won't happen in the playoffs. But, like, I wouldn't have a ton of confidence. These are very close games with Atlanta.
It's true. Okay. I think their confidence wouldn't be high.
Okay. It doesn't make me feel better.
It reminds me because I had a similular conversation with Fricky last year right around the same time, and he was like, if the Celtics saw the Hawks in the playoffs, I was like, yeah, they'd be happy.
These are not the Celtics,
beat them.
Though.
No, they're not.
Like, they're not the Celtics.
They're not, but they're good, though. The Knicks are good. Like, I'll give them credit.
But there's four or five teams you take to win the NBA title before you take them.
Definitely.
Last year, when Fricky made that comment, like, there was no team you're taking.
No.
And I remember that comment because I laughed at it, too.
I just was like, no, I don't think they would be worried.
I think I cut that for a clip.
I know.
Like, that's how wild a comment was.
I felt bad because he had so much momentum leading into it. He was like, and honestly, if they saw him in the playoffs, I think, and I was like, I think they'd be pretty happy. Because I think that they are better and they beat them. No, I mean, sure. Maybe the Hawks could give them a little bit of a tough time. The hard part is, with the upgrade that the Knicks have made in terms of their roster, in going out and getting Karl-Anthony Towns and having it work just really well. Like, again, hand up. I said it yesterday. I'll say it again. Like, been really hard on that guy. He's a very frustrating player to watch at times in playoff games because sometimes he'll disappear on offense. And a lot of times he'll pick up just the dumbest fouls down the stretch and just cost himself minutes, important minutes in late in games because he's got five fouls and you have to keep him out of the game. He's playing great. Like, he's fit in really well with what they want to do. Obviously, the Timberwolves are missing him drastically with what he brought to that offense. Like, it's worked out way better than I thought it was going to in New York. And it makes him a way better team. Like, they're just a really good team with him in the now. What does that mean? Maybe they can make the Eastern Conference Finals. Maybe. Because the two teams at the top end of the East in the Cavs and the Celtics, I think, are clearly better than everybody else. But
I think everyone also just expects the Cavs to still be gettable because we haven't seen them do it in the playoffs yet.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know if that's true, but I think
beware.
That's...
I don't know. I know people feel that way. Their offense is insane. It's just insane what they do offensively. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to what's trending here to kick off the show on a Trillville Thursday. Abe's in for Randy for the next couple days. This hour brought to you by Padley. Sell your home for cash fast at PADLYBuys.com. We'll be right back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
gentlemen.
Time now for What's Trending.
A look at the top trending headlines of the day.
Oh my God.
Brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service.
Now it's down to six. Trey dribbling right. Trey drives. Trey lays it up off the glass. No good. Rebound on Yucca. In the corner, George Niang, a three. It's off the rim. No good.
Oh, come on, George.
And that's the game.
I think we got pretty good looks.
Dang it.
You know, the whole game. It was really at the rim. We were missing some things, missing some free throws. And, you know, NBA games are long. And part of the challenge is even when you get down, understanding that. That, you know, usually, you know, that turns at times. And, you know, as long as we keep defending, we give ourselves a chance to do that. And, you know, I think that's what we did. And as you said, start to have some good things happen.
Yeah, look, he's right. I mean, with the way that teams shoot the three in the NBA these days, no lead is safe. We've never seen more leads evaporate in NBA history. Big double-digit leads in NBA history evaporate more than they do now. Because all it takes is 2 minutes of cold shooting and 2 minutes of hot shooting on the other side, and the lead is swinging back in the other direction. And that's what happened last night. Like, the Knicks were absolutely on fire in the first three quarters of that game. Really, in the first two quarters. And then the Hawks came out and scored 41 in the third and never gave up and made it a good game. The missed free throws were frustrating, though. LeVert's missed free throws.
It was there.
Yeah,
they were there.
That sucked.
Well, it's also
I really like Caris LeVert.
I do too.
I've liked him for a long time. He is what he is. Like, he's coming off the bench and he's getting buckets, and that's kind of what it is. But he's always been an enjoyable guy to watch play offense. But that was tough last night for him to miss those two free throws.
You know how, like, every time Alex Anthopoulos brings in a hitter midseason and they're like his fifth game, he's like got a game winning RBI, and that's the Adam Duvall game,
right?
Or that's the Jurickson Profar game,
right?
Like, last night was the exact opposite of that, where it had an opportunity to be the Caris LeVert game.
Every time the Hawks bring somebody in midseason, they blow a game for you.
George Niang had a chance to welcome himself into the team last night. He bricks that one.
Yeah, it's like, and Terrace Mann went 0 for 4 and had 1 point. So, yeah, there it was.
Last night was like the exact opposite of every time a city welcomes him in a new athlete. He's like, he's finally part of the squad.
Isn't that kind of a perfect microcosm, though, of why everyone believes in Alex Anthopoulos? And why no one believes in any other general manager in the city is because Alex Anthopoulos has a track record of doing it with guys that I didn't know that guy was going to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't know Jorge Soler was going to come in here and be the MVP of the World Series.
Right.
I didn't know an injured Eddie Rosario was going to get healthy at the right. You know what I mean? Like, and then it's like, yeah, you know, they flipped the Andre Hunter for some parts.
But they were both there. Like, free throws
for Caris,
and it's a totally different game at the end of regulation.
Totally.
And obviously, Niang puts a little more juice on that at the end, and you win.
Yeah, that's right. You win the game.
It's right there.
You would have won the game.
Now, you talk
about... What was the former shortstop's name? Adrianza.
Oh, Jirei Adrianza?
If that was Adrianza, he would have made that shot. If that was Chris Sale, it would have been a swish. But instead, it was not.
You talk about how quickly leads can evaporate, and I'm the idiot who, after the Hawks find a way miraculously to get to overtime, build a 5-point lead in like the first minute.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's over.
Momentum.
We got him. We hadn't held a lead more than, I think, 1 point, maybe 2 points at any point this game. I'm like, we got him. Trey hits the back rim on a deep three. Jalen Brunson's just down the court.
Yep.
There's a bad turnover on the next possession, and it's like, oh, there goes that lead,
Jalen Brunson, I no longer feel
good about overtime.
Brunson is an absolute assassin in those late-game situations. Like, and Dyson Daniels is a good defender, like a really good defender.
You and I feel differently about the performance of Daniels yesterday.
I think Daniels had a nice game, but I don't know how you could say anything other than Brunson got the better of him in crunch time.
I think Brunson's going to get the better of everyone in crunch time.
I think that's probably true.
I think that was probably as tough of a night Brunson could possibly have to still pop 35 or more. I think Dyson was bodying him up. There were a couple of loose balls they were both after, knocking it away around from. It's a couple fouls that I thought were a little iffy. But I thought it was, and I only brought this up because after they stood on the game, by the way, quite a while after it finished. And you saw Brunson dapping up a couple dudes.
Right.
And he went to dap up Dyson, and it was like a very short, like, yo, good game, see you next time. And I'm like, hey, man,
maybe he
can't we get a little bit of compliments for the defense that I just played on you?
Probably annoyed that Dyson Daniels was bodying him all
game. And maybe that's it,
I don't
too.
Know.
I thought it
but
was.
But when it mattered, though. Like, when it mattered. Because there was multiple isolations.
Taylor Brunson's an elite finisher in this game.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But Dyson Daniels is also
ass with 11 seconds left.
To be
I agree.
This, like, perimeter.
He got him, but I thought Dyson played excellent. And a guy,
he did as well as you can against a guy like that in a situation.
The guy had
like
a great game, and there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah, Jalen Brunson's just an assassin in late game situations.
Did it feel like watching that game? Because I looked at the stat line. I think it said that Jalen Brunson had 3 turnovers.
That's what it says,
and it felt like more to me.
Hmm. Yeah.
Did you feel that way?
Again,
maybe I'm hyping up Dyson too much on my own. That's a me thing.
I'll be honest with you. I think I was kind of watching the first 2.5, 3 quarters of the game out of the side of my eye, and then I really kind of dialed into the end of it.
Yeah.
And that's when Brunson kicked it into high gear and played better. So maybe I'm feeling like he played better than he did. I don't know. He got him when it mattered, and they end up winning 149-148. Trey did show up to the game in a shirt that said, "Sorry, I'm an All-Star." Pretty funny.
Was there a comma anywhere? Was it like, "Sorry, comma, I'm an All-Star"?
I think that's what the intent was. Okay. I don't know if the punctuation was there or not, but I think that was what the intent was.
Is that a dumb question for me? Like, is that dumb that that's the first place my mind goes?
Dumb
when you tell
question.
Me?
It's a very Abe question.
Yeah,
but I think you know
where was the comma.
I think you know what he was intending to say.
Period or exclamation point? Where do we land?
What I noticed about it was it looked. Obviously, it's freshly made.
Of course.
Right? It looked almost homemade. Like, my wife
well,
has
it wasn't marker, was it?
No.
You just like, wrote on it?
My wife has a Cricut printer where you can,
like, Target got a white tee?
She, like, makes t-shirts for
right.
for events. Like, we have t-shirts for Lily's birthday and stuff like that. It looked like maybe Trey's wife has a Cricut and made him a this'll show him sweatshirt.
I always wonder how I know physically how shirts get made, but still, it's always interesting, like, how quickly some of this stuff gets churned out.
Yeah, some of the RotoWear and what's the other company? There's 2 companies that do such
Breaking
a great
tea.
Job. Breaking Tea and RotoWear, man. Yeah. Those guys pump out t-shirts.
Some of this
so
stuff
fast.
Is within like an hour.
They pay attention to social media and they take stuff off of social media quotes and
Well, I think one of them got an official licensing deal with Major League Baseball now too. So, like, those
that's not the Players Association?
Or maybe it's the Players Association. I'm not
sure.
That's
how they put, like, players, but their hats will be blank.
Yeah.
They're allowed to put cities, and they're allowed to put players.
And they're in. I mean, the players have them. Like, you see those shirts all over the place. And we have a bunch of them, too, because they're all really, really funny and good. But, yeah. Anyway, Hawks lose last night, 149-148. They go into the All-Star break playing better, but still kind of is what it is. It's probably going to be like this for the remainder of the season. Here's Brian Snitker talking about Strider and Acuna.
I watched Spencer throw the side yesterday, and the ball's coming out really good. Ronald's doing everything. You know, he hadn't done a lot of the cutting and things like that. So, but, you know, I've seen him in Atlanta before I came down, and as you're seeing right now, I mean, he's doing great. I mean, he's checking all the boxes. He looks great. And it's just, you know, like you said, we're going to make 2 really big trades at some point in time early in the season and get a cut, you know, an all-star and a potential Cy Young Award winner back.
Shout out to Chip Carey for the "this is as good as a trade." That's what SNIT means, obviously. They're going to get those guys back at some point early in the season, and they're going to seem like trades. But, yeah, look, I mean, all of the stuff that you've heard about both of those guys has been about what you've expected, and it's been pretty positive. Seen videos of Acuna taking batting practice, that's exciting. Seen videos of Strider, that's cool. Just, you know.
I'm a lot more cautious on this. Strider I expect back relatively quickly. I'm not sold on Acuna.
Here's the thing.
And it's frustrating because he hits 4 bombs in 5 pitches. 2 of them landed about 1.5 feet from each other, way out in the yard, a little more to dead center. He's taken out a windshield. I just don't think he's coming back anytime soon.
Well, and then the other thing, too, is whenever he does.
How do you work
him out? We now have the history, unfortunately, of what it looks like for a while. Like, he comes back, and he's good, but he's not, you know, he's not superhuman Acuna good as he is when he's fully healthy, like a year removed from this stuff. So even when he does come back, what can you really expect him to be? Like, the idea that he's going to be 2023 MVP of the National League Acuna seems pretty far-fetched. Probably more 2022 good player. Like, you want him in your lineup better than most alternatives. But, you know, not a guy that's spearheading one of the best offenses we've ever seen in baseball like we saw in 23. So, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he'll look better than that when he comes back, but we've seen it. So, you kind of know what to expect.
Like, what a huge bummer that the All-Star game's here in Atlanta, and he's probably not going to be able to...
stuff the ballot box.
Still vote him in? It's still...
You can. You can
probably see him in the home run derby.
That'd be cool.
Somebody, one of them's going to do it. Maybe Riley.
Yeah, Olsen, Riley would make sense. Yeah. That'd be fun. Olsen. Olsen just hitting tanks over the top of the chop house. That'd be fun. All right, that kind of stuff gets you excited.
Yeah. Will be in there.
So much of the early conversation, and it's early conversation because pitchers and catchers reported on Tuesday. So much of the early conversation is those two guys' injury rehab and is the starting rotation good enough? You know? It's fun to think about some of the positive stuff, too, though.
I got Olsen
and Riley and Ozzy and all that.
I'm going to spin that around on you tomorrow.
Negative-wise?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah.
That's a 24-hour tease right there. 24 hours from now, Abe's going to say negative stuff about the Braves. Please be with us for the rest 2.5 hours of this show, though.
Georgia, too.
And Georgia?
Yeah.
Like Georgia's football team?
Yeah, I got some concerns, man.
Wow. What else? What else are you concerned about?
You'll just have to tune in tomorrow
Abe
and find
shooting
out.
Shooting arrows at people on Valentine's Day.
Ah, Cupid.
Not the lovely kind.
The anti-Cupid.
Tune in tomorrow.
Now I just had a visual of Abe dressed up like Cupid, and that's not what I want at all.
I got a better body than someone.
Better body than who?
Cupid. Cupid. Little fat tub.
He's a baby.
Still fat.
He's a cherub. You kind of built like Cupid, honestly.
I've worked a little bit to get some of that fat off. Thank you very much.
All right, we'll come back. We're going to talk about how the Falcons are going to fix their pass rush after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Kind of a Valentine's Day type song, sort of. I'll put it in the category. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, midday show with Andy and Randy. Trillville Thursday. 20 minutes away from an NFL no huddle. Some interesting news. Obviously, the official breakup between the Jets and Aaron Rodgers happening today. But some interesting news about another big-time quarterback and some interest he's getting from other teams. Potential. No, not him.
Oh.
Although I did see a tweet yesterday that said...
Don't tell me that was the Giants
one? One of those nonsense accounts, you know?
Yeah.
People, you got to be careful, folks. Some of these NFL accounts are not actually... real news accounts. They're content farming.
No.
They're just putting stuff out there so you'll click on it and engage with it. But yeah, I think it was the Giants, right? It was like the Giants are showing interest. No, they're not. Giants aren't interested in that, I don't think. I mean, sure, if you want him, come on. Come on and get him. That'd be great. I have seen a lot of some of the reactions from Falcons fans. You get like tweets and suggestions from folks, and they're like, hey, why don't we just do this to him? Just like straight up out of pettiness. As somebody put out yesterday, just put him on the practice squad and don't let him have what he wants. It's like, well, that would be very funny. I will give you credit for that. It would be very funny to just run your organization based solely on pettiness, but you can't have a $45 million player doing that. The people are really mad at him and they want him to
give
pay.
Give the old Justin Fields treatment where he's just, was it Justin Fields who had to play safety for a couple weeks this year?
On practice squad? Well, it's been a number of different
guys. Is that someone else?
Well, wasn't it Deshaun Watson at the end of his tenure in Houston, right?
Maybe, yeah.
They put him out there and they were like, yeah, put on the practice squad jersey and just go play scout team safety for us while we get ready for the next opponent. Yeah, look, they're going to cut him. It is what it is. If they can somehow luck into a trade for him, that'd be fantastic. But I highly doubt that that's what's going to take place. Interesting question that you threw out there in regard to where the Falcons are right now, odds-wise, to win the Super Bowl in 2025, like the upcoming season, 60-1. I don't know where that puts them in terms of the overall NFL, but 60-1 feels about right. Those aren't good odds, right? Like those, if you bet that for the Falcons to win the Super Bowl, you'd make a whole bunch of money and deservedly
so. It's definitely a number the NFL.
It'd be a long shot.
Yeah, definitely a number the books aren't expecting to have to pay out.
No, they're probably not going to have to pay that one out. And also, I would say be careful putting too much on that. You know what I mean? Just handing over free money to casinos, but you never know. I would say stranger things have happened. I don't know that stranger things have happened than that, but. Strange things happen in sports all the time. The question you had, which I thought was really interesting, is if the odds right now are 60-1 before the offseason, before the draft, before free agency, before they make some of the tweaks they're going to have to make to their current roster to try to move some money around, will that go up or down? And I can't imagine the Falcons' perception getting any worse than it is right now. With the Kirk Cousins stuff and just the amount of question marks they have on the defensive side of the ball, and maybe that's just me giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to address that stuff. Why would I do that? Because they haven't really ever on the defensive side of the ball, not anytime recently. But I just feel like the general thought of where they are, how could it be much worse than it is right now?
So I'm going to say something here, and people are going to take it one way out of context, and it's not what I'm suggesting. I think this is an incredible number.
Okay.
At 60-1.
Like value-wise?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I don't think they're winning the Super Bowl next year. So please let me preface what I'm about to say.
Yeah, but so in your mind, you think that the real odds are better than that?
They are way better than 60-1. And I think over time, and I don't even think it matters what the offseason does. They're going to add someone in the draft they think can help this team. They're going to figure out in free agency or trade how to try and help this team. Whether it does or not remains to be seen. But let's go back to where we were. Like, again, it's going to sound dumb. How far away were the Falcons from being contenders in the Super Bowl against some of these teams? Like, if you could premise this with there's not a massive fall off at quarterback, which you had.
Yes.
We were having the discussion at 6-3, can they compete?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not saying can they win, but can they compete?
Right.
Even with Michael Penix coming in right at the end. You went toe-to-toe with the Commanders on the road, a team that went into the NFC title game, right? Mm-hmm. It just, the pass rush, for whatever reason, got ramped up a little bit after the bye.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they're that far off. Now, I think there's a big...
Right.
I think there's a big difference between like where four or five teams are and where teams like 6-12 can be.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think what you're trying to say is they're not that far off from maybe being, because I think what the Commanders did was a bit
too lightning in a bottle
above what they're really capable of. But that's what it is. Like, you get to the playoffs and you're healthy and you come up against a team that isn't. And that's what happened with the Lions. Like, the Lions are a better team than the Commanders.
Yeah, they had no defensive pass. You're right.
They were just decimated by injuries by the time they got to that point of the season. But so what? Like, that's the way it goes. That's the NFL. A lot of teams end up with really bad injuries by January and playoff time, and that's where they were. The Commanders took advantage of it, so they deserve credit for that. But yeah, I can get on board with you saying that they're probably not that far away from maybe being a good story into winning a playoff game.
I don't think they're winning the Super Bowl. But 60-1 is a wild number. Like, 60-1 feels to me, because the worst team you're going to have, like impossible odds, is probably like 100-1, right? Like, the Raiders feel like they should be 60-1.
The Giants are like 200-1.
Are they that bad?
The Titans are like 200-1. Yeah.
I'm surprised the NFL's putting odds on that. I, you know how dumb I was?
At the beginning of this season,
I like the Titans.
I found an article from September.
You did.
The Commanders were 150-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
When was that?
Yeah.
This is August.
So they had already taken Jaden Daniels. They had already hired Dan Quinn. They had already done the majority of what they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong about 60-1 then. Like maybe I'm looking at it, but
well,
like
the hard part is like this is where I always, and this is a totally different conversation. This is more of like a gambling conversation where I find fault with people's definition of value, because they're not going to win the Super Bowl. So there isn't any value. Like, just because you think that they might be a little bit better than that number, and I understand you have to be betting a lot of different things consistently in order for that value play to pay off for you. But like, if you're simply saying that number in and of itself, it's not going to pay. Just like with the Commanders.
There are no legitimately
Panther or the Commanders at 150-1 and they made the NFC Championship
game.
Great,
cool.
You didn't get any money.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much you bet on them to win the Super Bowl at 150-1. The house has your money. So that's always my thing with value. So that's an incredible value. No, it isn't. It's not going to happen. So it's actually a terrible value. Don't bet on it.
In the big four sports over however many years you want to go back, have there been any legitimately like unsuspecting champions, like unexpected titleists? Like, I mean, how far back do we have to really go?
As far as teams that, that won the championship that you never in a million years would have seen them trying to win the championship. Yeah, yeah, doesn't really happen.
It doesn't happen. So I agree with you.
Doesn't happen.
60-1
never happens.
It could be 20-1. It could be 1,000-1. They're not going to win the Super
Bowl
next year.
There's five teams you can pick from the beginning of every NBA season.
And guess what? They're all shorter than 25-1 odds.
Yeah, for sure.
All of them.
For sure. But the NFL is the one where maybe it could because there's so much turnover.
The
year
Vikings
over year.
Last year probably had some wild odds.
There's five in, there's five out every single year. That said, the NFL, you look at these odds right now, they got the Eagles at 6-1.
I was saying, it was
the Eagles.
They
got the Chiefs at 6.5-1.
Yeah.
They got the Ravens at 6.5-1. They got the Bills right there. Then there's a little bit of a fall off after that. You get to Detroit at 10-1. And then it really kind of starts to landslide. And you have teams like, I think the 49ers right there, like that's a, that to me, what they did last year was an outlier. I think good organizations, outlier seasons are what the 49ers did last year. Bad organizations, outlier seasons are what the, I don't know, what the Commanders did this year. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you catch lightning in a bottle and have a good year out of nowhere. That's what bad organizations do. You get lucky and it happens every once in a while. Good organizations have those one or two occasional downturns, and then they're right back at it. And I just, I think the 49ers are a good organization that are built well and have a good coaching staff. So to me, like, that's a decent value because you could convince me that the 49ers could win the Super Bowl. You scroll much further down this list than that, like, it would take a minor miracle for a lot of these teams to do that. Now, all of that being said, like, with that being the perception of where the Falcons are in the hierarchy of the NFL, you're a right around bottom 10. You're, like, in 20th right now in terms of the best odds to win the Super Bowl. I could see it improving if they go out and get a interesting free agent.
So let's go back to...
If they draft well.
So let's go back to the root of the question. It's 60-1 right now. Is it going to go up or down over the course of the offseason?
I think it'll be, it'll go up. And by that, I mean it'll be better
55-1,
50-1,
40-1.
Like that. Yeah, I can see
now, that would suggest that something is done in this offseason that makes the books believe this team is more capable of stumbling on something.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's in a draft, whether that's in a trade, whether that's free agency, whether that's, I don't know, unexpectedly finding cap space. That would tell you that. Now, I'm a little less convinced, based on the off seasons that this team has had, that they're going to make moves that further sell me. Because they are binded a little bit because of the cap situation. I don't trust what's going to happen at 15. just as a blanket statement, I don't trust what's going to happen at 15. I told you this morning off air, I am preparing to talk myself into the idea that an offensive lineman's the right pick.
Yeah, I understand.
And
what
there
you're
are football reasons that you can under. Like, I get that.
That's the one that I would disagree with that I could at least justify. Just because of what you know you have at right tackle, now he's protecting the blind side.
I don't want to have a pick that I have to justify to myself.
Understand. But
I agree with you.
You're going to have to
If there's any offensive player selected, you can justify a lineman more than anything else. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. Now, when it's
drafting a lineman at 15, changing 60-0?
When it's a wide receiver, then that'll be a fun Friday up there at Flowery Branch again. We'll do the same thing we've done the last 4 years. Like, well, he is good.
Well, the other question is...
he is a good player.
Ultimately...
Would have loved to have had that guy and improve. But yeah, here's the thing. Like, in order for... Forget what the odds are.
Yeah.
Think about what your personal, like, expectation and perception of what they're capable of is. For mine to change, like, in general, about what they're capable of, they're going to have to display to me something that they haven't really ever done outside of maybe, like, a blip mid Dan Quinn tenure of genuinely investing on the defensive side of the ball. Draft picks, free agency, like really trying to make that an emphasis more so than like all they've done is invest high picks and the money and free agents on. And I understand Jesse Bates, but by and large, like on the offensive side of the ball, the priority has been that side of the football. To me, you've got that pretty well taken care of as far as what you need right now. You're going to have to demonstrate a philosophical shift to prioritize defense before I'm going to be like, yeah, okay, I really buy what they're selling.
Here's my concern, and you may agree with this, you may not. I think you kind of tried that a little bit last year when you acquired Judon and you add Simmons. Now,
different.
Neither of them worked out. Neither of them worked out.
Here's why I say it's different. I loved those signings, and I think that they were the right things to do. It was still just like the way that it was
gone about.
It felt
desperate.
Yeah, it was.
It felt like there was an air of desperation, especially to the Judon move. Simmons was just free agent out there, and you're like, we can get him for that, then let's do it.
The way that I've felt that they've treated the defensive side of the football in this era, like the Terry Fontenot, you know, this regime is we'll figure it out.
We'll find ways to win with whatever we have.
And that felt like, oh, wow, look at that. Great. Perfect. We figured it out. We got it. Like that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like planning to do something, doing it, drafting it, developing it. You know what I mean?
Those
guys are Band-Aids.
It's also not a one-year switch. Like, it's not you draft someone defensive at 15 and, like, we're now a defensive team. It goes into what you're talking about. Multiple drafts.
It's a 4- and 5-year
multiple
process.
Years of development.
Exactly right.
Multiple years of perfecting your scheme.
Exactly right.
Learning each other, et cetera, et cetera.
So that's why it's hard to say that, like, your entire perception of what they're capable of is going to change in an offseason, because what I'm asking for is a philosophical change. Is you've got to care more about that than you have. And I'm not saying you don't care about it. You just haven't cared about it in the way that you need to in order to win at the highest level. And you just look at the teams that are winning at the highest level. They're the best in the trenches.
You could say that, and you're talking about a multi-year thing. But at the same time, they're going to do something that they expect to work this year. And the question, that was the original topic that we didn't fully get into, we'll save it, is what are they actually counting on to do that?
Pass rush. Draft them.
Okay.
That's my solution.
Enjoy the lineman at 15 then.
Pass rush. Draft them.
Enjoy your right
Get the
tackle.
Guy at 15. Get the guy at 46. Sign a guy. I don't know. Braylon Trice gets healthy. Arnold Ebikidi takes a step. Ruka Ro-Ro-Ro stays healthy. Year two. Caden Ellis. Let him get to the quarterback more. I don't know. Commit to it. That's what I want to see. Commitment. That's what it's all about. We'll come back. We'll get to an NFL no huddle to kick off the noon hour. Thanks for being with us. Hour one was brought to you by Padley. Sell your home for cash fast at padlybuys.com. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.